com.
I'm Bob Oakes. This is The Connection. Our Constitution is in actual operation. Everything appears to promise that it will last, but in this world, nothing is certain but death and taxes. So wrote Benjamin Franklin in 1789. A couple of centuries later, death and taxes are still certain, but a key tie between the two is in question. Last year, President Clinton vetoed getting rid of federal taxes on estates, the so-called death tax. But now President Bush is pushing it right back to center stage. The call for the repeal of the estate tax is central to his $1.6 trillion tax cut package. You might imagine that the richest in the nation, from the Brahmins to the Buffets, would relish the prospect of such a move. But not so. About 400 members of the country's wealthiest families, Warren Buffett, George Soros, and Bill Gates Sr., are among the names on this list decrying the repeal of the estate tax, arguing that without an inheritance tax, mere lineage would be rewarded, not hard work and merit. Connection listeners, what do the wealthy owe to America, and shouldn't they pay for their success? 1-800-423-TALK, 1-800-423-8255 makes the Death and Taxes connection today. Joining us in the studio are Chuck Collins, is Chuck Collins, co-founder of Responsible Wealth. Chuck Collins, good morning.
Good morning, Bob. Good to be with you.
And Chuck Collins, the first question, yesterday your group put an op-ed petition into the New York Times. Explain what the group and the movement is all about.
Well, it starts with in December, I was approached by Bill Gates Sr., father of Microsoft founder Bill Gates, and several members of the Rockefeller family who had had a conversation and had all shared a concern that there would be a complete repeal of the estate tax. They're concerned primarily because they feel estate tax, a tax on accumulated wealth, is a good thing in the United States in terms of preserving our democracy and preserving equality of opportunity.
Well, how so?
Well, I think looking back to the 85 years ago when the estate tax was founded, Theodore Roosevelt, people like Louis Brandeis, saw that there were two conflicting American values. One was democracy, the other was free enterprise. And that when wealth got to be too concentrated, that it began to undermine the values of democracy. And so, as Louis Brandeis said, you can have either concentrated wealth in the hands of a few or democracy, but you cannot have both. So that was the spirit in which the estate tax, which is essentially an anti-dynasty tax, and it's an inheritance tax, was put into place. The other reasons, just briefly, and we can talk about them more in detail, that the signers of this statement have come together is we just don't think that there's been a very good discussion, a real debate on the downside of repeal. And we support actually reforming the estate tax. We support raising the exemptions dramatically, but we do not support complete repeal. And because it would be terrible for charity and for contributions to the civic sector, it would have a bad fiscal impact not only on states but on the federal government. And for the reason I mentioned, concentrated wealth and power.
Chuck Collins, you know of what you talk here. Tell us your story. You've given up in order to establish your credibility here, as opposed to just being the head of an organization pushing this. Tell us your story. You've given up wealth in order to do what you do.
Well, I'm the great grandson of the meat packer Oscar Mayer. So the whole notion of bringing home the bacon had a very different meaning in my family. And when I was 26, which was 16 years ago, I decided to give away what at the time to me seemed like a substantial inheritance because I felt that I had been given a sufficient head start. I really do believe that we are a better society if we have real equality of opportunity. And I had gotten the benefits of a debt-free college education. And I sort of felt like four generations after my great-grandfather had an excellent recipe for sausage and hot dogs, that I should return to the, you know, that our family should look again at what contribution we're going to make to society, not based on inheritance, but based on the work that I do in the workforce.
What do you say to people who hear your story and who turn around and say to you, however, but Chuck, you could have made the contribution to society that you feel you're making now without giving away your wealth?
It was, in that case, a personal choice. It was just for my own sort of spiritual development, for my own individuality. Remember, I'm 26 years old. I want to make my own way in the world. I don't want to be shaped by something that happened four generations ago. And for me, it was a great insight. And in some ways, the work of Responsible Wealth is an extension of that. We've met hundreds of people who share the concern I do, that they haven't given away all their wealth. I think that was sort of an extreme thing to do, but believe that too much concentrated wealth really undermines the best that we have in America.
Connection listeners, are you for repealing the estate tax or leaving it in place? 1-800-423-TALK, 1-800-423-8255 is the number to use to join the conversation on The Connection today. Billionaire investor Warren Buffett, who's part of your group, said that repealing the tax for the benefits of heirs is wrong. He describes it as misdirecting the nation's resources. He also says that repealing the tax would create a situation in America akin to choosing the next Olympic team only from the children of past Olympians. And he says, in so doing, we're rewarding heredity instead of merit. Expand on that.
Well, you know, I think people like Warren Buffett and the signers of the statement, and as of this morning, there are now 350 people who would have to pay estate taxes who have signed on to the statement. People like Warren Buffett believe that they have done well, that they have, you know, made a better widget or done something, but that society has a claim to some of the wealth that they've created, that they didn't do it all on their own. Warren Buffett talks about, you know, if you drop Warren Buffett on a desert island without a system of laws, without a system of property rights and regulation and markets and the things that we do to make this economy great and this country great, he would not be a wealthy man.
But thousands of people would be looking for him.
No, but I think he's saying is, yes, I'm talented. Yes, I've done good, but it's not all me. You know, the combination of good fortune, God's grace, and a investment in public services, government, and infrastructure has helped make me wealthy, and that government has a rightful claim at the end of my life to some of my accumulated wealth.
Let's bring another voice to the conversation now. Stephen Moore joins us. Stephen Moore is president of the Club for Growth. Stephen, thanks for joining The Connection. First of all, what is the Club for Growth and what's it advocating?
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Bob. The Club for Growth is an organization of Americans around the country who believe that we need to get the economy moving again by reducing taxes and by limiting the size of government. And so one of the big issues for our members is repeal or dramatic reduction in the death tax.
Why?
Well, a number of reasons. Number one is, you know, when you talk about the misallocation of capital and the resources in this country, there is no single tax in this country that more misdirects resources than the death tax, because, of course, what happens, I mean, the dirty little secret of this statement signed by many of these multimillionaire families, and in some cases billionaire families, is that a lot of these families don't pay the death tax. I mean, they engage in behavior that allows them to avoid the death tax. In fact, they set up these very large foundations, for example, that allow them to avoid paying the tax. And that is a huge misdirection of resources, because instead of all of those dollars going into creating new businesses, expanding businesses, saving an investment, they go into basically a tax shelter. And if you look at some of these big foundations like the Rockefeller Foundation and the Ford Foundation, it would be hard to say that those have really done much good for the country, at least in my opinion. I think that, you know, what we ought to do is move back to a system where the death tax is reduced to, for example, its original rate when it came into being back in the early 20th century was about a 10% tax. And I think a lot of Americans would say, look, you know, a 10% estate tax would be fine and fair. The problem is that right now the United States has the second highest death tax in the world. It's a 55% rate, which means that if your ship comes in and your business prospers or something like that, the government can and the IRS can literally reach into your grave at the time of death and take over half of your estate. And, you know, I've heard Chuck talk about saying he wants to reform the tax, this tax, but he never said reducing this rate, which is really confiscatory. The only country in the world that has a higher tax is Japan. I don't think our founders believe that the government should take over half of your wealth.
Chuck, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, a couple of things. And I should say I have a great respect for Stephen Moore. We've worked together on opposing corporate welfare and tried to make a level playing field in business, but we're on the opposite sides of this issue. The wealthy do pay this tax. The bulk of the tax is paid by 4,000 households a year whose wealth starts at about $5 million and goes up to gazillions. The actual effective rate of the estate tax is about 17%, so it's not that much higher than the 10% that Stephen advocates. The rate at 55% is at the very top. So for fortunes over $3 million and up, that's when that top rate kicks in. The lower rate is about 33%, and that starts this year. It starts at $675,000, but if we didn't change the law, it would continue to rise to $1 million or $2 million per couple. But the other thing I would just say is Stephen is talking about public charities and foundations like the Ford Foundation. Stephen comes from the Cato Institute, Libertarian Cato Institute, where they have been telling us for years, get government out of the business of providing for the needy and the poor, and get private sector and the charities involved. And I just think it's to attack the charitable sector at this point is doesn't make sense. I mean, this is the Thousand Points of Light people who have been telling us to, like Catholic Charities, and groups like that. Those are groups that benefit from the estate tax and for estate bequests. They are the groups that are clothing the naked and feeding the hungry and should be supported, not attacked.
Well, Chuck, I believe, obviously I do believe in charities as an alternative to government. And I really believe that if we got rid of this death tax, or at least substantially reduced it, I think this would, number one, be very good for the economy. I don't think there's any question about it that the death tax really hurts the rate of economic growth in this country, because it basically what it does, folks, is it once you've made a fortune, you're a Bill Gates in the world, what the incentive to do is to go ahead and spend as much of your wealth as you possibly can while you're living to avoid paying the tax when you die. The way you avoid paying the death tax is to quote, die broke. In fact, there's a best-selling book out there called How to Die Broke, because if you take two people in a very similar situation, let's say they both built up a business, they have, say, $10 million of assets, and Joe takes his assets and just lives a life of wine, woman, and song, he doesn't have to pay an estate tax when he dies, whereas Bill, saves, invests that money, continues to build the business, engages in the kind of behavior that are good for the economy, then when he dies, the IRS reaches into his grave and takes half of his money. So I think the perverse incentive effects of this tax are really underestimated by Chuck. And just one last thing. Look, I work at the Cato Institute. We are a charitable organization. We would, if we thought this would be bad for charities, we probably wouldn't be endorsing this. But we actually think that if you got rid of the death tax, the charitable giving would go up. And the reason for that is because people would, as the economy grows, people become much more beneficent in the amount of gifts they make to the private sector. Just one last thing is I think it's actually demeaning, really quite demeaning, to people who give money to charities to say the primary motivation for people who give money to charities is to get a tax loophole. I don't believe that's true. I think if you got rid of the income tax entirely, people would still continue to give large amounts of money to charitable groups.
Stephen Moore, stay with us. We're going to speak to you more, and we're also going to talk to Chuck Moore as well after we take a little break. This is The Connection from NPR.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. The two boys wanted in the murders of two Dartmouth College professors have been apprehended.
I'm Bob Oakes. We're talking about death and taxes today. We're talking about the Bush plan to repeal the estate tax. And I want to come back to our first guest, Chuck Collins, and ask Chuck, isn't it part of the American dream to work hard during your life so that you can not only provide for your family while you're still alive, but provide a better life for them once you're gone? And doesn't what you're advocating reduce that?
Well, actually, and again, I think the signers of this statement believe that we are working to increase real opportunity for people to work hard and do well over their lifetime as opposed to decrease. And let me say why. Because we believe concentrated wealth and power begins to corrupt our democracy, and the rules of our economy get to be shaped to benefit the real wealthy and large corporations. And I think we are in a period in our history where the concentration of wealth and power is at its greatest point since the 1920s, and that the priorities of government are now almost entirely serving these large corporate interests. That, though, the, you know, Americans have been saying tax policy is tax cuts are not their priority. They want investment in education, health care. They want to deal with environmental pollutions. Ordinary Americans put a ton of other things ahead of tax cuts as their priorities. And yet this is the agenda. The tax cuts are the agenda that gets pushed on us by the campaign donors and by the big corporate interests. That's why we're having this discussion right now. They've essentially bought this public policy.
But even with the estate tax in effect, don't we have an aristocracy of sorts in America? I mean, the money from the railroad magnates, the cattle barons, the oil empires have all been passed on, and we have political aristocracy as well. We have the Bushes, we have the Kennedys, we have the Bys.
But I think, say, in the years after World War II, the 30 years after World War II, we had much less extreme levels of inequality. We had much greater progressive taxation. And there was greater investment in helping build real wealth. So, you know, I think of like the GI Bill that gave people access to debt-free college education, and the FHA mortgage programs that gave, you know, a fifth of the population a shot at homeownership. There were things that we could do to bring society together. And that the interests of this new gilded class and ordinary people are not the same.
1-800-423-TALK, 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to the phones. Bill, thanks for dialing the connection.
Good morning, Bill.
My question is three-part. How about simplifying the estate tax by making it comparable to capital gains, but then shifting the payment of the tax from the estate to the recipients? And then the third part is, how about having the revenue stream from estate tax go to fund IRAs for each newborn citizen in the United States, say 2000 as a startup, and then keep that IRA locked up as a way to more equalize the ownership of assets in this country?
Stephen Moore, why don't you start with that?
Yeah, I like that idea a lot, actually, and that's one of the proposals that that's sort of the leading proposal now in Congress, to do exactly that, to basically get rid of the death tax, but to tax these assets as capital gains when they're realized. And by the way, it's important for people to remember, and most Americans understand this, that this money, that the central economic problem with the death tax, and the reason that most Americans think it's unfair, and about 3 out of 4 Americans favor repeal of the death tax, is because the money has already been taxed. Americans think it's just basically unfair to tax money that's already been taxed. So I think he's right. Let's get rid of the death tax, tax this all at a 20% capital gains tax, and I think that would be quite fair, and it would make sure that this money isn't getting away scot-free from being taxed, but it would lower the rate very significantly.
Stephen Moore, thanks. Chuck?
Well, I think this is an encouraging discussion, because we have been trying to crack open the argument around complete repeal. And this is the kind of discussion we could be having if the proponents of complete repeal were not sort of obscuring the reality of what's going on. I actually think Bill's proposal makes a lot of sense. I think we should have an inheritance tax. I think the idea of saying, let's use the revenue from this to close the wealth divide in America, to make every child a trust fund baby, to create universal savings accounts or child, you know, IRAs for every child that's born, so that they can also end their life with some resources, I think is exactly the kind of proposal that excites certainly the signers of our statement. I would just say one point to Stephen's point about double taxation. The bulk of assets that are taxed in these estates are appreciated stock, appreciated land, mm-hmm. and artwork that has never been taxed.
And that's, by the way, Chuck, why it should be taxed as capital gains. I think that if you put Chuck and I in a room together, I wouldn't be surprised if we could hammer out a compromise that we all could live with. I think everybody sort of agrees we have to do something about reforming this tax. And, you know, look, I'm not saying we should outright repeal the thing. I mean, sometimes rhetorically we say that. But the fact is, it needs to be made less punitive.
And it needs to be made so that, you know, small and medium-sized estates, people who built up a business their whole life and want to leave some of that to their kids, aren't really facing a real punitive penalty at the time of their death.
Stephen Moore, Senior Fellow at the Cato Institute and President of the Club for Growth, thanks very much for joining us on The Connection today. We want to bring in another voice now, Jane Hilbert Davis, a family business consultant, one of the directors for the Cambridge Center for Creative Enterprise. Jane Hilbert Davis, what are your experiences of problems that family businesses have when trying to deal with the impact of the estate tax?
Well, I think what my experience has been that no doubt it's a real problem for family businesses. And in fact, there was a study in the 1996 Family Business Review that reported 61% of family business owners believe that the estate taxes will threaten their business survival. My own experience, and I did an informal study with my colleagues, an informal survey this weekend with my colleagues, and not one of us really knows of a family business that has failed solely because of the estate tax.
So you're saying the fear doesn't necessarily match the reality?
Not my experience and not my colleagues. Now, we think of it more of a symptom rather than a disease. And although the cost of a good estate plan for small and mid-sized family businesses takes a far bigger chunk out of the small and mid-sized than the very wealthy, than the large, I think this discussion is very good, and I think we need to have it.
But you know, I have to say that in the real world, it does happen. I know a family whose father admittedly did not do well in planning his death. Family runs a small business, and they've had to sell off significant assets in order to have to pay the estate tax. They're barely staying afloat. These are not wealthy people. They're just getting by comfortably. And although I do think that the business may, in fact, go under, and it strikes me that if I know someone who's in this boat, there must be thousands of people out there annually who do face this problem after the tax has been imposed on them.
I'm really not saying that it is not a problem and it doesn't happen. What I'm saying is that there are many other issues in family businesses that do affect the succession or the transfer from one generation to the next. As you people may probably know, that only one-third of family businesses make it from the first to the second generation. And we as family business consultants do see other factors involved, such as being able to have these conversations, making decisions, denying mortality, the founder denying mortality, and not getting good advice and not really thinking about the estate plan or talking about the estate plan when they need to.
1-800-423-TALK, 1-800-423-8255 is the way to join the discussion on the death tax, the estate tax. Michael is on the line now. Michael, how are you? Michael?
Hello.
Michael.
Good morning, Michael.
Oh, I'm sorry. I guess we don't have Michael. Hopefully he'll call back. Bill is calling from Jay, New York. Bill, you're with The Connection. Thanks for calling.
Hi, good morning. I would just like to propose, there seems to be a conception that the wealthy people have really accumulated this wealth on their own. The real reason why they have the ability to accumulate this wealth is because they live in America. We have provided for 225 years an extraordinarily stable environment for the accumulation of wealth, and their wealth is basically the product of the entire foundation provided by the American worker and the American consumer. Without people to build their product and without people to purchase their product and without people to protect their wealth, we've gone through how many wars and we still maintain the original United States of America.
And so
we're
therefore
all in this together, you know. These people have found a certain niche, and they have built on basically the entire foundation of knowledge throughout the whole world. You know, Thomas Edison invented supposedly the steam engine, but in fact he simply adapted four or five previous models to the most successful part. Nobody stands alone. We are really, you know, linked arm in arm through this whole thing. It's a symbiotic relationship. And because a certain amount of the population manages, through, granted, their own initiative and their own, you know, their own drive, they have managed to accumulate a certain amount of wealth. But the reason they have been able to do it is because the American people have been there behind them fighting for them, buying for them, and really contributing to their wealth. And it just seems to me unfair to take that entire pocket and keep it in one place when, in fact, it should be a societal dividend, you know. And as far as big government goes, the reason why we are still here is because we have big government, because we have an interactive government. And every time we come up with a new product, we have the opportunity, we have to monitor it and provide a legal basis so these things don't get out of hand. It's really the American people who have contributed to the wealth of so many people.
And so let me ask you a question, Bill. You say you then see the estate tax as a progressive tax?
Well, I see the state tax. Yes, I do see it as a progressive tax, and I think it would be unfair not to raise the bottom limit, because obviously, you know, $2 million today is not what $2 million was in Teddy Roosevelt's day. And, you know, a small business, I know a fellow who has a golf course, okay? He's right on the margin. He, you know, you can take a third of the value out of a golf course probably and keep going. So he's concerned, and I think he has a right to be concerned, because he's a small marginal businessman. When you're talking $400 billion, who needs $400 billion? Okay, I mean, that you're out of sight. But for the smaller person, yes, the bottom should be raised. But it's a dividend for the entire people, really. It's not just one person's ability to garnish wealth, because everybody builds. You know, we've been building on knowledge for ever since the beginning of time, okay? And these people didn't just invent knowledge. They just simply drew on what everybody else has provided for them in the past, adapted it for their own use, and they've made a very nice return on it. But it's a return on the investment of the entire American people, not just a single individual.
Jane Hilbert Davis, when you speak to small businesses and you advise them about their tax situations and their estate tax planning, do they at all talk about, when discussing estate taxes, an obligation to the rest of America?
I think they do. I think they do think about charitable giving, and especially those that have enough assets. But I think they do, and I think they are also concerned about the world they're leaving for their children. And I think that not only do they want to make the world better for the kids, but for everyone else. And it is an issue. But I think the estate tax does really encourage this, too. And they set up family foundations, for example, so that they can leave not only a place for their children perhaps to work, but also leave a legacy.
Chuck Collins?
I think it's hard for people to believe that people would put the national interest to get ahead of their own financial interest. And it just sounds, you know, like people sort of like, what are you selling here? You know, what's the deal here? And I just want to say, one of our members, Martin Rothenberg, who founded a very successful software company in New York State, stood beside President Clinton when he vetoed the estate tax bill last year. And he said this. He said, you know, I went to high school, an excellent high school, and someone else paid for it. I went to college debt-free. Someone else paid for it. It's a GI Bill, baby. I went to into a field of technology that was largely built through government public investment, and I made $30 million. And you're telling me I shouldn't be that society doesn't have a claim on this wealth that I've created? I mean, he's creating a foundation. Mm-hmm. He's passing on wealth to his children, and he's saying the society has a claim because they've helped make me. You know, and I think the big kahuna myth in our society is this notion of, like, I did it all myself. I made this, I started this all myself. What about your workers? What about society? What about God's grace, luck, and privilege? People don't always own up, I think, to the other forces that contribute to our health and wealth. And I think we need to sort of really have a public conversation about that.
I think if you think about developmentally too, as the family business owner reaches his or her 50s and 60s, it's really a normal stage of human development to begin to think about what is my legacy and what can I leave. And I see that happening an awful lot. And I think that they really do want to think about that. And I think a great way to do that is to set up a family foundation. And I'm seeing more and more of that happen. It is an opportunity for them to contribute.
Chuck, you mentioned at the top of the show that you fear in repealing the estate tax that bequests to charitable organizations will dry up and that there will be a significant impact in philanthropical giving.
There's no question. The Treasury Department estimates that if there was no estate tax last year, $6 to $7 billion less revenue would have come in from bequests. That will rise to about $9 billion. The estate tax is a powerful incentive for giving to charity, particularly among the super wealthy, with people with $20 million and up in terms of wealth. And let me give you a very concrete example: land conservancies. A lot of us in New England, around the country, are concerned about the preservation of open space, agricultural lands, you know, environmentally sensitive land. Without the estate tax, groups like Nature Conservancy get enormous bequests of sensitive, environmentally sensitive lands. And it's true what I think Stephen Moore says, is that many people give out of a sense of larger good, but it doesn't help, or it certainly helps, that there's an estate tax there to get people to do the planning, to get them to think about their legacy as something else other than just giving money to their children.
Jane, let me ask you this question. Some supporters of the repeal think that charitable giving might rise if the tax is repealed because the wealthy would have more money to give away. Do you think that's true with the folks you deal with?
I would say that I agree really more with I think I agree with Chuck that I think that it would not. And I think that the estate tax, repeal of the estate tax, would certainly affect charitable giving.
Why would it not?
Because I think that the families, I mean, I think obviously the families who are doing the estate planning and who are the super wealthy really are not only are thinking of their legacy, but in terms of estate planning, charitable giving is really very effective. And I have the four siblings right now that I have been called in to help run some family council meetings and help them to decide what to do with great tracts of land that they have inherited, and it's really quite it's appreciated. And one of the things they are thinking about is conservancy issues.
Let's also talk where that money goes, though.
We will talk about that after we take a little break.
That's where it's going to really ripple down.
We're talking about the estate tax. We're talking about the Bush administration's efforts to repeal the estate tax as part of the $1.6 trillion tax cut package slowly making its way through Congress. Tell us what you think. Tell us how you think you might be impacted after the break. Call us at 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. This is The Connection from NPR.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Authorities say the two teenagers wanted in the murders of two darker opportunities at Allaire.com.
The taxman's taken all my dough and left me in my stately home, blazing on a sunny afternoon. I can't sail my yacht. He's taken everything I got. All I've got's this sunny afternoon.
This is The Connection. I'm Bob Oakes. We're talking about the estate tax today and the Bush administration's plans, the efforts in Washington to repeal the estate tax as part of the giant tax cut package. Joining us now, Lynn Cornwell, a cattle rancher from Montana who went to Washington, D.C. to protest the estate tax. Lynn, first of all, tell us what your fears are, how you think you would be impacted by the estate tax.
Well, it's a huge thank you very much. It's a huge problem in agriculture, especially with these ranches. These ranches are going through a lot of dynamic changes, and in a lot of cases, if you're trying to include your family and bring more people back into the operation, which everybody is, an incentive, if you will, to get young people back into the business, you need to figure out ways to value your estate and determine how many people you actually can afford to have involved in the operation. And part of the problem is the values of these estates have outpaced the easement values, if you will. I'm a member of the Nature Conservancy, and I've worked very closely with them, and they can't offer enough of an easement value to take away the burden of a punitive tax basically between generations. And so, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Something we've dealt with, Colorado cattlemen started what they call the Colorado Cattlemen's Land Trust. Virtually every state in the West now has some kind of a land trust, but the frustrations that we're hearing from our members is that we're not getting these ranch values are escalating, inflating at such a pace that we can't keep up.
Well, let me ask you specifically about your situation, if you don't mind being frank. What do you figure the value of your ranch is? And if you should pass away in an untimely way, would you be able to pass the would you be able to pass the ranch on to your family?
The value of this ranch, there are about 20 families that live and work on this ranch. I'm the third generation. My 26-year-old son is the fourth generation. It's a very complex operation. Like I say, 20 people get up and go to work here every day. Lots of cattle, lots of land. A lot of the land belongs to the federal government, and we lease that land. But the IRS views that as still part of the value of your estate, and our estate's worth probably close to $10 million. Without the cattle, so you've got a situation, a $10 million ranch, and the easement value on 25,000 deeded acres at $30 an acre is about $650,000. We'd love to do an easement with the Nature Conservancy, but frankly, that won't even protect a sixth of the operation.
Chuck Collins, let's bring you back into the dialogue here. Part of what you're suggesting is, in fact, the last line of your ad from the Responsible Wealth ad that was in the New York Times says, let's fix the estate tax, not repeal it. How do you fix it so that our rancher friend here keeps and his family keep the ranch in the family?
Well, I should say just personally, congratulations on the business you've built over generations, and I don't think an estate tax should fall on a business like yours. The reality is that only about 6 out of every 10,000 estates that are taxable are family farms and where land is the substantial asset. So let me say that 6 out of 10,000 taxable estates. So it's a very small percentage of the estates that actually get a taxed our farms. The 1997 Reform Act did a number of things to raise the exemptions for farms and spread out the payments if they needed to pay over 15 years. I would just say, though, that the exemption should be raised. I mean, Senator Daschle and people like that are talking about raising it to $5 million. But then when assets, you know, I think that that probably is as high as it should go, because there are also a lot of so-called family farms that are actually large corporate farms masquerading, and they get a substantial subsidy. Mr. Cornwell mentioned that he grazes cattle on public lands. It happens that we, the taxpayers, lease those lands to ranchers like Mr. Cornwell well below the market value of what it would cost him to lease those on privately lands. It's a $100 million subsidy a year that we, the taxpayers, give to cattle ranchers. So we should, I think the context of this discussion is, you know, we don't want to hurt businesses, but we should also recognize that we, the taxpayers, have a claim on some of that value.
Lynn Cornwell, you drove a tractor to Washington in order to protest the estate tax and demand its repeal. Is anything less than repeal workable for you?
We don't think so. We think, you know, certainly there's some upper limits. You know, I think the cattle industry is 97% family-owned, and you have to recognize the fact that we're a huge land-based, we're a land-rich industry, if you will, but we have very, very little operating income. I mean, you're talking in this business less, in most cases, less than 5% return on your investment. So your investment your value keeps going up at a pace faster than your ability to produce, and we think that there's, in order to provide for open space, there has to be a real valid discussion about the values of these ranches. I mean, we're seeing it here in this neighborhood. A lot of these ranches, if faced with an estate situation, they simply sell out. They're subdivided. I was in Alabama last week. They're worried about it. Mississippi's worried about it. A huge amount of open space is being lost every day just because there's no vehicle to provide for some kind of a transfer between generations.
Lynn Cornwell, Montana cattle rancher, thanks very much for speaking to The Connection today. Thanks as well to Jane Hilbert Davis, family business consultant, one of the directors of the Cambridge Center for Creative Enterprise. 1-800-423-TALK, 1-800-423-8255. Join The Connection, give us a call, and let's go to the phones. Gary is listening online from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hi, Gary.
Hi, I'm pleased to get through. It seems to me that if we're going to be able to have a constructive discussion about this issue, the first thing that we have to do is sort of clean up the rhetoric. And step one would seem to be disposing of this term death tax. I mean, there's absolutely no such thing as a death tax. It's no more a death tax than it is a tax on greed. I mean, if we want to say that income taxes are taxes on greed, in order to euphemize it and make the, you know, that tax kind of put some horns and on that particular tax, you know, we could do that. But if we want to have a constructive conversation about it, we could call it what it is. I mean, a better description of what the quote-unquote estate tax is, I suppose, would be a windfall inheritance tax, if anything. But it's certainly not a tax on death. If somebody dies, that's not a taxable event. It's only a taxable event in as much as there's somebody that inherits a very, very huge estate.
Go ahead.
That's about it. I can't believe that people keep letting partisans on this issue get away with that ridiculous euphemism.
Well, let me ask you, what do you think the fix is, or is a fix necessary from your point of view?
No, I think the exemption should probably. I mean, personally, I think the exemption should probably be lower, and the tax should probably be higher. Because as far as I'm concerned, transfers of those sorts of huge amounts of money. More money than the huge vast majority of people in this country could ever even think to ever possess is basically unearned income. And we've declared war in this country on unearned income a long time ago, especially with welfare reform and such like. But for some reason, unearned income when it comes to very rich people, very privileged people, is something that nobody really cares about. I don't know. If we really are going to have a merit-based society, which is what people, libertarians, say that they believe in, then you know, what's up with all this unearned income floating around?
Gary, thanks for your call and your comments. 1-800-423-TALK, 1-800-423-8255. Let's take another call. Rob is on the line now. Hi, Rob.
Thanks for taking my call. I have two questions. One is, I think most people, myself included, have the gut feeling that the very wealthy avoid most of their taxes. I was wondering if there's any studies on how much of the wealth taxes on wealth are avoided through offshore banking or other tax subterfuges. And the second question is, I've never quite understood why people with so much money, with millions and billions of dollars even, need so badly to keep it. I mean, I look at the ads in, say, the New Yorker, and I wonder how many $5,000 shirts or $10,000 bottles of wine somebody could really use.
Chuck?
Well, just I kind of want to go back to Gary's question and then speak to you, Rob, which is the proponents of complete repeal have done a masterful job shaping the terms of the debate. They're powerful interest groups. They have gotten this term death tax. Now, if you watch CNN, you'll actually hear them refer to it as the death tax. That is not a neutral journalistic phrase for what we're talking about. And they have done a good job of phrasing this as an all-or-nothing issue and getting people like Mr. Cornwell, farmers, to be sort of their visible spokespeople. But if you actually dig and just look at the facts, 6 out of 10,000 farms are not taxed. Or 6 out of 10,000 estates have farmland. So that's a tiny increment. And their concerns could be addressed through raising the exemptions. Just one other thing, which is if these proponents of estate tax repeal really cared about family farmers, then they would not be pushing for things like the so-called Freedom to Farm law, which passed and has been devastating to small farmers. It's a corporate agribusiness law. On your point, Bill, Rob, the wealthy can do a lot to reduce their estate tax liability. They can give gifts to their children tax-free over many years. They can set up charitable partnerships. They can do it. But in the end, the estate tax is paid by those with estates 5 million up. The richest half of 1% of households carry the major share of the estate tax burden.
I was just wondering how much is actually avoided through either semi-legal or illegal means or even legal means. I know that people put a lot of their money in numbered bank accounts, for instance. How does
yes.
that get
yeah, I, there's a terrific book by Bartlett and Steele called The Great American Tax Dodge, which looks at that. I don't know off the top of my head sort of the amount of money, but they're good, you know, sort of investigative journalists who've looked at this. And your last question, I think, is a core one. It's the fundamental, how rich is enough? How much do people really need?
Rob, thanks for your call. Let's take another to the connection now. Eric, you're on the line. Thanks for dialing. No, Eric, we lost Eric. Give us a call back. But we can go to Tom, who's calling from South Dakota. Hi, Tom.
Hi, and thank you very much. I just wanted to raise a couple of quick points on both sides of this. There's conjecture as to whether or not the charitable giving would go up if the estate, if the death tax were repealed. And we know what the situation is now. We really don't know for sure what it would be the other way, especially the impact on small educational institutions like colleges and universities that are partially supported by state government, but rely heavily on foundation kinds of money. Churches and synagogues are in that same category, I think. On the, you know, we can't conjecture whether this trickle down sort of theory is really going to work.
So you say leave it alone?
Well, no, I'm saying adjust it for the other side, and that's my neighbor from Montana has some very good points, and one that I'm not sure was raised with the subsidies and everything else for family farms. Remember what the result is, and that's food. Do we want to eat or do we not? And that's what those subsidies are for. It costs so much to raise this, and these people make so little. We're not talking about just ranches. We're talking about small family farms that have to have a lot of land. So an adjustment to the tax seems to be the route. Thank you.
Tom, thanks for calling. Chuck, I want to ask you one last question. What's the response been, and this is it needs to be very brief here, what's the response been since you've come out?
It's been overwhelmingly positive. The statement that was signed by Mr. Gates and George Soros has now been, people like Bill Joy, who's the CEO of Sun Microsystems, have signed on. So people are interested, intrigued, and inspired.
Thank you, Chuck Collins, founder of Responsible Wealth. Also thanks to Montana cattle rancher Lynn Cornwell, Stephen Moore of the Cato Institute and president of the Club for Growth, and family business consultant Jane Hilbert Davis, who joined us earlier this hour. Connection listeners, continue the estate tax conversation on our website at theconnection.org. I'm Bob Oakes. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and by the Allaire Corporation.